We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How about I go ahead and address the larger than average elephant in the room?
No, I have never coached the sport that you folks call football. And heck, you could fill two internets with what I don't know about football.
Hold on now. If I were to get fired from my job where I'm putting cleats in the trunk of my car.
You got the boot for putting boots in the boot.
I love that. You know what the happiest animal on earth is? It's a goldfish. You know why?
No.
It's got a 10-second memory. Be a goldfish, Sam.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. Episode 9 of our Ted Lasso rewatch, the penultimate episode. And of course, I am joined by my co-host, the managing editor of For the Win, Alex McDaniel. Alex, how are
Hi,
you doing tonight?
That was lovely.
After your first day of work?
This is such a caring podcast. Like, we're just so supportive of each other's endeavors.
I mean, the show we're covering, we might as well be.
I know. We might as well be pleasant to each other. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing very, very well. Ready to talk episode 9 of Ted Lasso. Lots to cover in this one. Alex, before we get into it, tell the folks about your other podcast.
Sure. I'm also on a podcast called Ain't Slayed Nobody. It's a tabletop RPG podcast. If you don't know what that is, then you should check it out. And if you do know what that is, you'd probably really like it. And it's just a bunch of sports fans playing a game and having fun. You can find us at Ain't Slayed.
Yay. Perfect. And if you're a baseball fan, check out my interview series From Phenom to the Farm that's presented by Baseball America. That comes at you every other Tuesday. Tomorrow, I have an interview with former South Carolina All-American Michael Roth, winner of two College World Series. That is also, unless he blows me off, then disregard that. We'll have someone else on, but because I haven't recorded the interview yet. But if we have recorded, it should be really good. So listen to that tomorrow. But Alex, let's get into Ted Lasso, episode 9, second to last episode of this amazing first season, all apologies. After a series of mistakes on the pitch, pressure mounts to bench Roy. Rebecca finally reveals the truth to Ted. People put a lot of cards on the table in this one, Alex.
Yeah, so this is kind of where everything sort of has to come out, you know, or I guess that you couldn't have packed all this into the last episode, you know, given what happened, but it's, yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, quite a bit. You know, a lot of things really come to a head. I mean, the big thing, Rebecca revealing the truth to Ted. I mean, we have basically two linear storylines in this one. We've got Rebecca kind of coming clean about everything that has gone on this year and making amends. And then, you know, the end of Roy. I want to kick opening questions to you. As usual, I have two, but do you have an opening question for this one?
I do. You're going to be so mad because I promise it's not as serious as yours.
Mine are not that serious.
But given this episode, I think the ultimate burning question of this episode, what does a British owl say? Do you know?
I do not know. What is the punchline to Ted's joke?
The punchline is whom. At least that's what I think. It's got to be. That has to be the answer. Because, you know, he asks them both and then it just never comes out. And it drove me nuts the first time I watched it because I was like, what? There was no payoff. You'd think it would like come back in a clever way. I'm pretty sure it's whom.
Do you think Beard would have known that already, though?
Yes.
Absolutely. I don't see Bird. I don't see Ted getting that one past Beard. I feel like Beard would have known. I feel like Nate would have asked.
Yeah, Nate probably wouldn't have known.
if he wasn't halfway down the field and feeling terrible about it.
Yeah, that's true. But Beard was like looking for any excuse, you know, to show how mad he was at Ted.
Such a great Beard episode. So my first question is, when I prepped you for this.
You did.
Is there a worse TV villain out there than Rupert? Is he the worst TV villain of all time? Very broad generalization. Is Rupert the worst TV villain? Because he is a fucking monster.
So I thought about this, and I did a little research in terms of, like, I wanted to know what the internet said about worst TV villains, and I looked at a lot of listicles and stuff like that. And I realized that a lot of what, like, the shows that people consider to have the worst villains, I never watched them. Like, Lost. I mean, it's a lot of hit shows.
I saw some of those lists, too, because I watched Lost, and they put the villain of Lost up there at the tie, and I just don't agree with that at all.
Yeah, and, like, there were a lot of shows that were absolutely fantastic, but I never got around to seeing them, so it was hard for me to say. And, you know, what's interesting is Tony Head, who plays Rupert, he played Rupert in Buffy Vampire Slayer, and I never watched that either, but I assume he was a villain in that one, too, right?
I did not. Buffy the Vampire Slayer was a little bit before my time. I did not watch Buffy, but a lot of these shows that you're talking about, I did watch, like Game of Thrones, which we've already discussed, you did not watch. Did you watch the first season of True Detective?
No, I watched the first episode. I had a lot going on back then.
I mean, busy times. I think that year, I might be mistaken, but that year was the year that you and I both had children.
I was going to say, I think that was the year Jack was born. So yes. I get a pass on everything that year.
Yeah. So the villain in that one is a terrible serial killer. And my distaste for Rupert is on par. It's like Rupert and the Yellow King from True Detective. Same kind of guys for me. They're both horrible, horrible people.
I would say as far as being on par with a villain that, you know, I, for something I've seen, I know this isn't a show, but all I can think of is The Great Muppet Caper and Charles Grodin and how he frames Miss Piggy into looking like she stole the baseball diamond. Anyway, that's all I had to add to this discussion.
For Rupert, I kind of, because now if I see this guy in anything else, it's going to take, and if he's playing someone who's not a piece of shit, it's going to take me a lot to overcome that distaste. And I look at, in the first season of Westworld, Tessa Thompson plays a character named Charlotte Hale. Tessa Thompson is a wonderful actress. She's great in Creed. She's great in, like, Ragnarok. She's great. But she is so good at playing Charlotte Hale, who is so bad that every time I see Tessa Thompson and other things, I have to get over how much I hate that other character. And that's what Rupert is to me. If I see him in anything else, it's going to take a lot.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I'm that way about anybody. Walton Goggins plays the bad guy really well, but I love him so much that even when he's evil, I just adore him. Just want
he's baby Billy.
Yeah, I mean, he's fantastic. I just don't know if there's anything that I could compare it to in terms of a show, because I just think Rupert is just so cold-blooded, and they just keep going back and forth with each other, he and Rebecca do, and especially like the quintessential scene in this one between the two of them that kind of changes her perspective suddenly. He absolutely destroys her. And it's like they've been going back and forth all season, and he knew he had the one thing, and he made sure that he was there in person to see her reaction to him having a child, knowing that he didn't have a child with her. Just awful.
It's one of the most despicable things I've ever seen in my life.
And the comedy makes about, well, I guess I wanted to have a baby with the right person or something like that. Or he clearly says, like, I didn't want to have a baby with you. Just the absolute worst thing you could say. He's such a piece of shit.
The fucking worst. I have one more question before we get into best scenes.
Okay.
This one might make you kind of sad. Oh. Which, as a sports fan, which athlete getting old has made you the saddest? Because there's nothing. I did a freelance piece a few years back that it was just like how painful it is to watch your childhood sports heroes retire.
Yeah.
And some of them do not retire gracefully.
You're going to get mad at me for saying this, but as a Giants fan, I got to say Eli.
I mean, I've rooted against Eli for a very long time. It was very sad to see the way it happened with the weird one game benching at the timing. That stunk for him.
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, he's such a great dad and like he's a fun loving guy. And it's great that he's living his best retired life. Well, no, he's coming out of retirement to work for the Giants, but as far as playing goes, but it's what he just captures this part of my youth for me. So he was a senior when I was a senior in college, when I was a senior in high school and I was getting ready to go to Oxford, and he was young and he was still, you know, in his early 20s. And he was, once I got to college, he was with the Giants. And like, it just represents a part of my life that I don't want to believe was 20 years ago. You know what I mean? And so I think even though it's not like he's getting old where he can't walk or anything, I think it's hard to watch them get older because we pour so much of ourselves and our identities and how we remember our lives into our sports teams. And so I think that's what it is for me.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing for Eli is he's now doing commercials for barbecueoutfitters.com. And as someone who loves smoking meats, that's big for me. I'm right there on the Eli. Eli is redeeming himself for me, as he was playing for one of my least favorite football teams, but now he's doing commercials for one of my favorite industries. So it kind of balances itself out.
Yeah.
For me, it's Joe Mauer. And you know, he got old, but it was also, he had some debilitating injuries. That's never easy to see, but he was my childhood favorite player, and it's not fun. It's, you know, I every now and then when I feel like I need to get emotional, I watch his last game where he comes out to catch and gets a standing ovation. It's wonderful. But let's roll into best scene. Let's start off with another athlete who's getting old. The scene I'm calling Brunette Oscar the Grouch, where where Roy is dunking himself in an ice bath in a trash can, and it's setting up what I think is setting up a potential Roy retirement for season two.
Rocks, huh? How we doing here? Woo! That is cold, man. Looking at you in there, making me all chilly inside.
Can you just tell me I fucked up and then go?
Not gonna do that, bud.
I lost us the game. I'm a piece of shit.
Easy now. You had a bad day. Big whoop.
Big whoop?
Yeah, big whoop. You beating yourself up is like Woody Allen playing the clarinet. I don't want to hear it. All right? So just, you know, knock it off. Go easy on yourself. Okay?
Hey, I got your back. Ain't nothing gonna change that.
Look at you in there, looking like a brunette Oscar the Grouch.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, it's weird because the way we talk about aging and the way we talk about getting old, obviously it's a totally different thing in sports. Roy is in his mid to late 30s, both the actor and the character, but his body's worn out. He's been playing since he was a kid, and he's been the best at what he's done since he was a kid. And now he can't count on his body to hold up to his passion for the game. And it's, you know, it's funny, and they take their shots or they take them and the jokes and everything, but you got to think he's been taunted by Jamie this entire season. He's been called grandpa and everything else. So he's really had to come to terms with, you know, I've got a lot of life left, even if I don't have the ability to keep playing this game. What am I going to do when this isn't my life anymore? So you see this, he really gets to a crossroads here where he's got to learn how to look at himself through a different lens if he's going to be able to go on. And I think, you know, obviously in season two, the rumors is he's going to be like an assistant coach or something. And I definitely think there's going to be some role that he has within Richmond, you know, given everything that happens.
Yeah, because he mentions at the end of this episode that he has a distaste for going to play in America. So you can't imagine that he's going to do that. But it's one of the most authentic plot lines that the show has taken in this season. Most realistic sports wise things is it is very difficult for athletes of any caliber, any age, to come to grips with the fact that they are no longer that kind of player. They can no longer play the sport. I think it's one of the best scenes in Moneyball is when they're signing 18-year-old Billy Bean, who doesn't look 18 years old, and they're telling him, you know, we're all told at some point that it, you know, we can't play the game anymore or something like that. It's a really good monologue. And that's what Roy's dealing with right now. And he's coming to grips with it. He's been slowly, you know, Jamie's been needling him for being old all season, like you said. And this episode is the culmination of that. of him having to come to grips with that. And it's really tough. It's a great Brett Goldstein performance. But speaking of great performances, the scene that we were talking about earlier, Rupert, I just call this one Rupert is the Devil and Rebecca Comes Clean. It's basically the back-to-back scene of Rupert shows up at the office, tells Rebecca that he and Bex are having a baby. And this scene and the next one where she comes clean to Ted should have gotten Hannah Waddingham an Emmy nomination and possibly a win. Like, she is amazing.
To me, it's the best scene that she does in the entire series. And it goes back, and I know I've said this a lot, those moments where she's got to hold it together. And we see the, you know, tears welling up in her eyes. And I mind you, you know, back up a little bit, because we also have, at the end of the last episode, we had this revelation where Keely knows. And she says, if you don't tell Ted, I'm going to. So Rebecca's got this pressure that she's going to have to own up to what she's done. And she brings Ted in her office and she can't say it. She's kind of babbling all over the place. And then she's like, you know what, let's just do this later. Then Rupert immediately comes in and knocks her down with the news that he's going to be a father at age 70 with his new fiance, I suppose. And just the way that the tears well up in her eyes, but she... none of them fall. Like, she doesn't cry in front of him. She's just so still and trying to do what she's been doing all season long, which is pretend that she isn't affected by him, which is obviously, as we know, not true. And it's the final straw. And suddenly it's kind of like, no matter what happens, it's like she realizes no matter what happens to that club, even if she had succeeded in totally burning it to the ground, it's not going to change that he's gone. And it's not going to change the kind of person he is. And she can't hurt him on the level that she thought she could, but he can still destroy her. And I think it's a really, you know, reckoning moment for her.
And an incredible step for her in taking that. And instead of, because on a first time watch, you could see this is potentially a moment where she does not tell Ted and she, you know, fully commits to tanking the season. And instead she goes right into Ted's office and tells him, and it's, as good a, it's a great Waddingham moment, but it's an incredible Sudeikis moment. It's Ted just always knows, you know, says the right things. Divorce is hard. And then, you know, they have that hug and he says, I think that if you care about someone and you got a little love in your heart, there ain't nothing you can't get through together. And I wish I would have watched this episode a few weeks ago before I had to rewrite my vows, because I would have put that line in because it's so, so good.
If you want to quit or call the press, I'll completely understand.
I forgive you.
You what? Why?
Divorce is hard. And it doesn't matter if you're the one leaving or if you're the one who got left. It makes folks do crazy things. Hell, I'm coaching soccer, for heaven's sake.
In London.
I mean, that's nuts. Yeah. But this job you gave me has changed my life. Gave me the distance I needed to see what was really going on. Yeah, but you and me, we're okay.
It is good. I mean, probably better that you stuck to original content. But I mean, you know, everyone loves a good Ted Lasso line thrown in their wedding vows.
He's the best. I mean, he's perfect. It's a really good scene from them.
Yeah, and I think we've mentioned this a few times, or maybe we just said it, you know, among ourselves, that for as nice as Ted is, and he is genuinely kind, he's not a pushover. He didn't tell her, it's okay, don't worry about it. He said, I forgive you for what you did. And then he says, divorce is hard. It doesn't matter if you're the one leaving or you're the one getting left. And you can tell she's stunned by it, because in her mind, you know, there's good and there's bad. And she said earlier in the episode, come on, tidy up your mess, Rebecca, tidy up your mess. And so to her, she thinks he is going to be understandably upset. And it shocks her. Like, his kindness just shocks her. But then he reminds her, like, we're going through the same thing right now. I'm not dealing with it in the same way you are, but there's a level of understanding there. And I think that might be one of my favorite, top favorite scenes in the entire series, is that moment between them.
We've talked about how the show does such an incredible job with human interaction and with people. I don't want to say not realistic, but kind of an elevated look of how you should express your emotions and how you should talk about people and talk to people and not really reserve in your feelings. And this is, it's two people really coming clean. Well, Rebecca coming clean to Ted. And like you said, Ted using the right wording, not saying it's okay, but saying I forgive you, which is just as an, I mean, it's a huge thing for Rebecca to come into his office to do. And it's arguably just as big a thing for Ted to forgive her. And see the, you know, see the bright side in it and how that it's changed his life, and really makes her feel better about herself, which is important because Rebecca's had a lot of low moments in the last 9 episodes, and it's a great, great scene. The next one is this one is brief, but it's Roy technically getting benched. Ted actually doesn't, as he notes to Beard later, doesn't bench him, but Roy gets what's going on there. It kind of, like we talked earlier, there's just nothing more difficult for an athlete than the end. We get a couple of these moments with Roy. It's like denial, acceptance, you know, all these different steps. And this one is pure. This is just straight up anger.
Yeah. I mean, Roy's very good at anger. As we've learned, he owns it, but yeah, I think this whole realization and then, you know, him going to Keeley's house and his niece Phoebe is there and he's mad and he's trying to talk to Keeley about it. And she's doing her just wonderful job of like kind of making fun of him for feeling sorry for himself. And then you have this great moment where she says, Phoebe, come here. I want you to tell me everything, you know, describe your uncle, close your eyes and tell me everything about him. And she lists off this very sweet list of all these things. Like he buys me ice cream and he curses a lot. And when she's done, you know, she didn't say one word about him being a footballer. And that was kind of the point. And I mean, Keeley's just I just love Keeley. How can you not? She's just so great in every scene. But again, like what I said earlier, he's got to learn how to see himself as a person and not a footballer anymore. And that's difficult. That's not an easy thing to do. But while he might be, you know, old for the game, he's got a lot of years left in him. And I think, you know, watching him go through that and suddenly have to shift his own perspective of his self-worth and his identity, it's fascinating.
Keeley through Phoebe gives Roy a new perspective in about 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Because he says it, this is, I love this line. Roy Kent has been the best player on every team he's ever been on since he was 10. That's a huge psychological hurdle that he's having to overcome. One, not only not being the best anymore, not being able to dominate, cause that's been a part of his life for, you know, 25 years or so, but it's also like he's losing his identity as a, there's a difference between being a mainstay on a team and being a non-contributing member on a team, like going from, he's not even a starter anymore.
Yeah.
At the end of this episode. So it's a huge, you know, it's just this whole episode of watching Roy grapple with his identity and kind of come to that, you know, through hearing what Phoebe says. And then obviously what we get at the end is really just a beautiful, authentic storyline. Wow, I can't believe this show handled this storyline so perfectly. Like what a surprise. I'm floored.
Well, yeah. What's funny is, Jane, Coach Beard's girlfriend, is played by Phoebe Walsh, who's actually the person who wrote this episode. And she's, I believe, the main story editor on the show. So fun fact. By the way,
I mean, they have quite a moment.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they have a great moment in this episode. Which was that before or after? See, I'm getting it all confused. That
I think that was before. No, it was after. It was after because that's the next scene I've got is that basically the winning matter speech. When Beard finally kind of freaks out and said, you know, it's okay to care if you win or lose. Because Ted, and I will say it's like Beard pointing out something. He says that, you know, it was different, you know, when it was college kids and it really had to be about making them feel good and you know, connecting with them and making sure that they're, you know, emotionally healthy and doing that side of things. But Beard points out that this is professional and this means a lot to a lot of people and that winning is important. And he's got May there to back him up. And Ted has to play to win. You know, it's part of his mission with his team was to get them all to buy in and get them to believe. But, you know, what he owes to this town is to win. And that's just as emotional a part of emotional health as, you know, is team and how they interact. So it's, I really love Beard kind of finally snapping and just being like, we've got to fucking win.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I think, you know, when you think about college sports, and I I come from a school that can attest to this, you can have one of the worst teams in the SEC, and it's your team is still going to go on. There's still going to be a football team in some form. You know, we're lucky to not have to deal with, like, you know, being relegated to the Sun Belt or something. But, and it is more about the kids, right? Which we could get into a whole thing about that. But ideally, at its best, it would be about shaping and molding these young men into something. But when you get into pro sports, I mean, this is a business. It's an organization. And a lot of people, not just the town itself, but a lot of people in the organization, the people who work for the club, like, they're counting on their jobs. And it all matters. Their success matters. It affects everybody. And what I love is that Coach Beard tells him, you know, if you're just going to play Roy to prove a point, I don't want to drink with somebody that's selfish. And then you have this moment of, you know, we're careful to say, of course, Ted's not perfect. We've seen that played out. But he goes as far as to say, like, look, I know you are the way you are, and that's great, and it works 99% of the time. But in this situation, what you're doing is actually detrimental to the mission. And he provides some good perspective for Ted to realize, like, you know, if you believe in what you're saying, you've also got to believe in the fact that a lot of people are counting on you to make the best call for the entire organization and not just the best call for you or the best call for Roy.
Yeah, I mean, part of being a coach or a manager, sometimes you have to make a real tough decision. We've seen Ted do it once with Jamie, but that was and that was as much about, you know, winning as anything, because he was seeing kind of the long game with that. But with this, it's the first time that Ted's being a little short-sighted, and Beard has to kind of beat that out of him a little bit. And then Coach Beard, noted sex haver, picking up his old flame, like, dream performance, basically letting the guy that she's playing know that she's been toying with him. Just, I mean, a stunning, stunning pickup by Coach Beard.
It was incredible. Coach Beard is just, I really hope we get some more. Did you say this in the last episode that we get more? You hope we get more backstory on him next season. See, I can't keep up with our conversations anymore.
I can't keep up with them either. But that sounds like something I'd say, because I would love to see a Wichita State flashback scene. Yeah. The show hasn't really gone into anything like that, any flashbacks or really anything, you know, panning away like that, or really cutting away from any of the main characters. But I would love to see kind of a flashback or something like that. The next scene is drunk Ted, when, you know, Roy and Ted have that conversation in Ted's apartment, and Ted makes, you know, one of the most stunning statements he's made this entire season when he calls Alfonso Ribeiro the greatest physical comedian of the 19th, 20th, and 21st century. Wife did say is, like, that's like the broad statements I make when I say, is Rupert the worst television villain of all time? That's yes. What basically Ted did with Alfonso Ribeiro being a physical comedian.
I know. I love this scene where he and Roy are in Ted's apartment. And of course, you know, he's making tea for Roy, which, by the way, I'm drinking tea right now out of my Ted Lasso mug. And here's what's...
Look at you getting in the spirit.
Well, here's why. So I mentioned earlier, I've had a pretty long day. It's my first day on the job, and it was a lot of training and stuff. And I knew we were recording this, and I was like, I don't want to drink coffee because that's going to keep me up tonight. Let me just go with something a little more mild. So I'm going to do a cup of tea. Well, I'm on my fourth cup right now.
Impressive. That's actually caffeine. You're in the spirit of England and the show and stuff. You were actually not in the spirit of Ted.
Yes. And so I actually ended up having more caffeine than I would have had if I just had, you know, a regular old cup of coffee, but that's neither here nor there. No, but I love, you know, Ted's a little tipsy or full on drunk, I suppose. And Roy, even though he's coming to terms with everything, he's a little more lighthearted now after this conversation with Keely. Like, he's able to make a few jokes here and there. And you mentioned it earlier, but my favorite line in this scene, and maybe the entire episode, is when he said, what am I going to do? I'm paraphrasing. Like, what am I going to do after this? Go play in America, where I would fucking dominate, by the way. They would all say, oh, is this football then? it so much. It's just very dry and beautiful. And Roy's great. We love him.
Yeah. It's, you know, Roy has, he's come to Ted's apartment because he has come to grips with that. You know, he's saying, Ted gives him the option of showing, you know, saying you're hurt, whatever, but Roy deep down, and we get the fulfillment when he shows up for practice, but he, you know, Roy he's a team guy now. Being a team guy doesn't always mean you're the best player, but it's important, and Roy knows he's important, and Roy showing up at that practice is huge, and it's a great moment. And Alex, I don't know how many times I've said this, that in the last 9 episodes we've recorded, something along the lines of, and this might be my favorite moment of the season.
I know, we say it every time.
When Roy taps that believe sign, it is just, it's in the credits. It is the smallest little thing. He walks over and taps that believe sign, and my heart just exploded.
It's wonderful. It is, yeah, it's one of those moments where it just, it's so subtle and it kills you when you see it. And you have so much hope. And I think, like, you know, I keep going back to trying to remember how I felt when I watched it the first time, especially knowing there were only 10 episodes and you don't really know what you're coming into. I mean, this episode really does not set you up for the last one. We know what's going to happen in terms of, we know they're going to play their last game against Man City. We know that Jamie plays for Man City, so there's probably going to be something there. But at this point, the team hasn't been steadily improving necessarily. And there's really no indication that there's going to be some neatly tied happy ending, you know? And I just think it's really funny because you get done with this. If you didn't know how many episodes there were in the season and you get done with 9, you could argue there might be, I don't know, 3 more. Just because the way they don't really focus on the games themselves. So, yeah, I think that ending was just so simple and pure, and it didn't end on, you know, some one-liner or something dramatic that makes you say, you know, like a cliffhanger or anything like that. It just ends very neatly and sets the stage for the last episode.
Mm-hmm. And sets the stage for a lot of, I assume, you know, we'll do season 2 predictions, I guess, next week, but it sets in place a lot of what Roy's whole situation is going to be like. And season 2, really setting him up as the team guy. And, you know, this show wouldn't have hurt us that bad of having Roy not show up or pretend like he's injured or something like that. But it is now definitely viable to see Roy being a coach or being something where he still wants to stay in Richmond with Keeley and Phoebe and, you know, be connected as opposed to, you know, try it out. He's at peace. And Roy has not been at peace the entire season with anything.
Yeah, no, he really hasn't. And you can tell he's still struggling with it, but he's also, this has been a slow evolution for him throughout the season of becoming a leader and understanding, you know, the leader isn't always the person who could do the job the best, but it is the person who can inspire everybody around them. And he really grows into that role, which again is crucial for coaching. And so I think it's him kind of realizing who he is as a person. It's really lovely to see his journey into being Roy.
Yeah, well, and Ted said it early in the season. He told Beard that, like, Roy's the guy we need to flip first, and not because he was going to be the best player on the team or lead them to victory. It's because, you know, the team would go where Roy goes.
Yeah.
And that's very, very apparent. They all get fucking pumped when he, you know, when he says the second team is going to kick the first team's asses. It's a great, great episode. Did I miss any of your favorite scenes in this one?
No, I think we covered all the scenes. I mean, there was, you know, the beginning. I love when Ted's line about little girls being silly and mysterious. I think that's just such a great way to sum up little girls. And I love the way they just talk about women in general throughout the series. And even right after that, when Keeley and Rebecca are in the room with all the shoes and Nate walks in and he says something like, I know women like shoes, but come on, this is ridiculous. And he immediately says, I'm sorry, that was so sexist.
Like, such a precious Nate moment. Like, so good.
Seeing men correct themselves or seeing them not have to be corrected on that, it's a refreshing thing because I have a lot of friends like that, and I think a lot of us know a lot of men like that, and it's really nice to see it play out on the screen where they instantly know they've said the dumbest thing and they acknowledge it. Yeah. And I also love when Rebecca's stalling because she doesn't want to tell Ted, and she starts talking about the etymology of procrastinate.
Which is very much a Ted thing to do.
I know. I mean, she's totally Ted in this. She's using all of his mechanisms to try to stall and to try to keep from saying what she needs to say, and she's acting a little goofy, and we've seen her loosen up consistently throughout the season, and so I think that's so fun too. But this, you know, this episode didn't have too many things that were, you know, I think a lot of these episodes you feel like there's so much packed into it. I think last week, so episode 8 to me is to where you almost, when you think back on it, you're like, that could have been two separate episodes. I think this one was very like tightly done, you know, the story like flowed really well and everything was just sort of succinct. Oh, I did think of one thing actually. When Ted does the Carlton in front of Roy and he says, I never know how to react when a grown man does the Carlton in front of me, I love that parallel.
It's a great callback.
It's a great callback to Keeley saying, I never know how to react when a grown man beatboxes in front of me.
R.I.P. Biz Markie, by the way.
I thought he didn't die.
Did he not?
No. I mean, so that was...
Did I get fooled?
I mean, I think the world did, but I asked someone the next day, you might have to go back and edit this part out. We need to verify.
It was a hoax. Biz Markie is alive. This is great. Everyone celebrate.
R.I.P. Biz Markie.
Alexa, play Just a Friend.
Sorry, that's really good. He's very much alive.
My Alexa just started playing Just a Friend. It heard me.
Of course.
Alexa, off. I might actually leave that in. No, but it's a great callback to that moment. I think the best scene in this one is, yeah, like it's kind of like you said, it's very streamlined. Basically, it's, you know, we start out with these two narratives of Rebecca needs to come clean and Roy needs to come to grips that he's old. And Rebecca comes clean to Ted and Higgins, and then you know, Roy has this journey throughout the episode. And I think the best scene is when he's over at Keeley's house and that moment with Phoebe, that little 15, 20 seconds of Phoebe talking about why she loves her Uncle Roy and none of that having to do with him being a footballer. And then she also tells him right away that even if he doesn't play, she will still watch the match.
Right. Zeppelin is amazing.
Wait till you hear Cream. But first, I need you to close your eyes for me, yeah? Can you describe your Uncle Roy? Everything that you can think of. Go.
Well, he's my uncle. His beard is scratchy. I love him.
Well done, Phoebe. See? I didn't hear anything about being a footballer.
Who gives a shit what she has to say? She's six.
The point is, you don't know what people think about Roy Kent. Secondly, all that matters, Roy Kent, is what you think about Roy.
I know. And I love that scene too, because even though, you know, it was Keeley's first time meeting Phoebe, you can tell she has real maternal instincts, and not even just maternal, but like kind of a big sister sort of role. And you can almost envision her and Roy having kids of their own in that moment, you know, sitting together and being sweet with Phoebe. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but I thought it was just very heartwarming.
I would assume that we are going to get more Roy, Keeley, Phoebe in season 2.
I'm so excited.
We need it. Let's take a quick ad break and get back with Funniest One-Liner.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. So funniest one-liner under the radar joke. What is the, you know, I've already mentioned it, the one in the first scene when he says you're looking like a brunette Oscar the Grouch. And then you talked about Nate saying, you know, having his little sexist joke, but then acknowledging that it was sexist, which is more of just a beautiful moment than a joke. But what else did you have in this one?
I like where when Ted shows up at the pub and he sits down with Coach Beard, who has tons of pints of beer in front of him. It's like 8 or 9 or something, just tons of glasses. And I forget what prompts it, but Ted says to Beard something like, yeah, you're like Chief from Cuckoo's Nest. And again, this is just like a subtle nerdy thing. And Beard says, I always thought I was more of a Tabor. And we're talking about two characters with mental illnesses. So Chief was actually schizophrenic in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And then Tabor actually had like antisocial personality disorder. So actually Beard's right about his assessment. He does, because you know, he's very a man of few words, so to speak. And he doesn't
very seem straight faced.
Yeah. And, but again, it's just one of those lines that like, I'm sure the writer who put it in or the person who came up with it, I'm sure they had just a blast writing it in there, knowing a very particular portion of the audience was going to catch it. It's one of my favorite things about it. I think the whole show is this way, but yeah, I just really like that as a nerd.
I need someone good at YouTube to run through the entire season and just really pull all the clips of Ted and Beard making great pop culture references. It's been one of the best parts of the show is them. And again, there's got to be a ton more of that coming in season two.
Yes, I hope so. They have to, because I need it.
I love when Ted is talking to Roy, when drunk Ted is talking to Roy. I can't even remember what he says before this, but Ted drops a rest in peace, Socrates, which is just amazing.
Well, what he says to Roy is know thyself. So he's telling Roy, like, you need to understand who you are and what position you're in. And like, you need to know yourself first before you know other people. And then he looks up and says, RIP, Socrates. It's just wonderful. You know what else in this scene I just thought of? I'm sorry. I don't mean to go off track.
Go off track. We've got plenty of time.
So it starts with Ted offering Roy some of the open jar of peanut butter. And we know Ted keeps it open. So when he walks by, he can just dip his finger in it, which is like disgusting. But I suppose if it's just a one person jar, fine.
Yeah, you can't offer someone that jar, though.
But when Roy acts like, absolutely not. And he's like, you're allergic to peanut butter? Or are you allergic to nuts? He's like, I'm allergic to fingers. But when Ted first mentioned the open jar of peanut butter a few episodes back, wasn't Roy the one who was like, that's a pretty good idea, actually?
It was Roy. Pretty fucking good idea.
Anyway, that was not a one-liner, but I just thought about it.
It's, yeah, like you said, it's a good idea, but that's not a shareable peanut butter. You need to have guest peanut butter if you want to do that. Like singles, maybe a single serving kind of thing, like a single Jif cup or something if you want that option.
It's just weird. It's like the weirdest thing about Ted. And I don't know, maybe I'm too uptight in that I would never keep an open jar of peanut butter on my counter or stick a finger in peanut butter, but I find that to be one of the oddest things about him, I think, that keeps coming up is this open jar of peanut butter with a finger, whatever. There's got to be something to it. And I'm sure like one of our or many of our listeners are, they're going to DM us with the backstory of like, because y'all are so smart with, you know, it's some tradition somewhere in Kansas City and barbecue sauce or something. But
yeah, our listeners have come through like crazy. And also, just if we get to the on the pitch talking the sports action of this one, I had put out kind of a call last time, or at least I said, if someone would let me know when Premier League started, like when everything goes around and you know, the beginning of things so we can pick a team and go, that I would try to get into it, or at least, you know, that would be my starting point.
Yeah.
And so listener Joseph Drews on Twitter, I'm probably mispronouncing that because that's my thing. He let me know that Premier League starts on August 13th this year, so that's great. And I put out a call to some of your former colleagues, Alex Kirshner and Richard Johnson at Split Zone Duo.
Yes.
And I asked, what team would a Virginia Tech fan, which is being an Ole Miss fan, which is you, who would they root for in Premier League? And I have been told that I need to root for Tottenham because apparently, because I had said, you know, I just need a team that hasn't won shit in a decade and where things are going really south. Apparently Tottenham are my guys, so let's do that. And per Richard, you are needing to root for Leeds.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that, but okay. That's fine, whatever.
Which Richard said it's because scoring a relatively absurd amount while also conceding way too much and punching above their weight. Leeds says,
I mean, yeah,
hello.
That sums up my favorite football team. Yeah. Yeah, it does. So thank you.
So let's go. My guys at Tottenham, really pulling for you. I can't wait to find out where Tottenham is, what it is. looking forward to learning a couple of the guys' names on the team, getting up at the ass crack of dawn to watch Premier League on a Saturday or Sunday, whenever that comes on. Let's go. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
I'll do it. I'll try it.
We do get a practice scene in this one, but it's less about what's going on in the field and more about, well, it is a little bit about what's going on in the field. We're watching, you know, Beard and Nate are watching Roy make their point for them. It really stinks to watch someone do poorly. I mean, we're going through it with Roy in this one. It kind of sucks to watch him fail at all these agility drills that a young Roy probably would have aced.
Yeah, it's just part of everything else we talked about. Like, they really wanted us to feel the weight of his inevitable demise. Yeah, it's a good scene though.
It is watching Beard and Nate distance. Even Nate, you know when Nate is distancing himself from Ted and really taking that stand, because again, Ted has invested so much in Nate and helped Nate so much with his confidence that Nate would never disrespect Ted unless it was absolutely necessary, which we see later because Nate is distraught over disrespecting Ted whatsoever.
Yeah, but we know from the first episode that Nate is a team guy above all else, and we see that based on when he tries to get Ted and Beard off the pitch on their first day when they arrive. And then he realizes, oh, you're the coach. Oh my gosh. And suddenly he's very respectful, but he still says, he's like, okay, but you got to get off the grass. Like, you got to go. It's clear where his loyalty lies. And just seeing these little moments of Nate throughout the season where he's spoken up in times where he might not have, you can, to me anyway, like, I think it's always him thinking, okay, this is mortifying and I don't want anybody to be mad at me, but ultimately I want this team to thrive, so I'm going to say what I think needs to be said. It's great. We love
this season has been about character growth. A lot of characters have evolved in a lot of good ways. Nate probably more than anyone, just with the confidence of episode 1 to now episode 9.
I know. It's nice seeing Nate come out of his 41-year-old shell.
I was about to say our little sweet 41-year-old Nate.
Not hating, by the way. It's just shocking to me still.
Nick Muhammad, skincare god.
I know. I want to know his skincare routine.
I know. He's doing wonderful things. What worked in this one that we haven't talked about yet? I actually have a few things.
I mean, what didn't work is the better question, I suppose. And I don't even know if I can answer that tonight. I think Rebecca coming clean, the way she did it, it wasn't this like overdone speech or anything, the way she kind of lays it out there. And even Ted's reaction to it, again, we don't have this big swell of emotion where they're both like, oh, you know, just crying all over each other. It was just, it seemed very realistic to me. I think we've all been in those situations where somebody we care about, for whatever reason, whether it's romantic or friendship or somebody close you work with, where you've had to either own up to what you've done or where they own up to something they've done to you. And you don't want to lose them. You know, it's not as simple as, okay, well, I'm never going to talk to you again. But it's such an uncomfortable thing. There's nothing worse than that. Because you know that it's very possible the relationship changes forever. And usually it's not for the better. But in this case, it was. And I think it was just really well done without being too much, you know.
Mm-hmm. It was almost subtle in a way. Really, really effective way to go about it. And it's, you saw that it could have been the thing where she calls him into the office and she does this big prepared speech, but instead it was this impulse thing after being crushed by Rupert, and it much, much more effective. There's something that's very authentic in this one, very realistic. Sometimes when a man is, you know, doesn't have to go out in public for a while, he tries something new. That was me when quarantine started. That was Higgins after he quit his job. Yes. We both made facial hair choices that not, it didn't work out for either of us. I felt Higgins so much that when he shows up with the bad facial hair, let me tell you, around like April 20th of last year, I had a mustache that would have gotten me booted from an elementary school. So I felt Higgins really going for it. Probably the first time in his life he had the chance to not be clean shaven. And I really respect it.
We didn't even talk about that scene. I totally forgot. Yeah, I love that when he shows up and he's like playing the bass. Like, it's just, it's so cute. It's just such a cute thing. And Higgins is like, I'm embracing my new self. Yeah, it does remind me of quarantine. I mean, I'm trying to think of what my quarantine thing was. No mustache for me, unfortunately. I'm trying to think of if I did
mean,
anything.
Same, really.
If I did anything unusual. I mean, most of it was just out of we couldn't go anywhere to get our hair done or our nails done or anything. So, yeah, I just, like, had my hair up in a bun every day to the point that, like, I had ponytail holders everywhere in the house. And I just got used to, like, having my hair on top of my head. But that's not as dramatic as a soul patch. So... Yeah.
I figured, you know, no one was going to see me for a while. The job I was working at the time, we didn't use Zoom or need any of those things anyway. So I really had a chance to finally see if my baby face self could make something happen. And let's try again in 10 years. That's all I'm going to say. We'll see. We'll see if things change in my 40s. But
what's interesting about that scene too is just I love the fact that we know Higgins has been fired. And we don't see him rushing around to look for another job. He's just taken up this new hobby and this new identity. Another thing about quarantine, you know, like when, and I've talked about this, I'm pretty sure on here before, shortly after lockdown, I was furloughed from SB Nation. All of us were. And so we had to wait. You either took a buyout or you had to wait 3 months to find out if you still had your job. I was the idiot who didn't take the buyout, and I was like, I was holding on to hope, thinking if I could just hold out until August, fine. So I have these 3 months where I really have nothing to do, and I was doing some freelance stuff, you know, I was keeping the bills paid, but I had all of this time on my hands, and so I was like, I've just got all this creativity that I want to get out. What am I going to do with it? And of course, this was around the same time that I got Animal Crossing. And so I feel like I spent all last summer just depressed in quarantine building the most elaborate Animal Crossing island you've ever seen.
I mean, we all had to, you know, we all had to find things. Higgins was probably about a week away from getting some sourdough starter and going for it.
Yeah. Make the bread. Do the hobbies.
Yeah. And I mean, and speaking of which, we also didn't touch on the great scene when Ted, you know, when Higgins comes back and Ted gives him Trent Crim's daughter's biscuits.
I know. It's so cute. I just love the whole thing with the biscuits. Is
truest thing he said all season though is that she's three, she'll get over it.
Yeah, and that's true. It seems sad if you're, you know, if you're thinking about a crying three-year-old, but at the end of the day, kids are resilient. They're going to be fine.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. There's two things in this episode that I need a backstory on. Again, I would love another, you know, if we just get a flashback-centric episode in season two, I would, along with their time at Wichita State, I need to know how the initial Ted asking Keeley about the Tom Ford campaign, I need to know how that conversation went, how Ted brought that up.
I love that. Because you don't know where it's going when she starts saying it. And it's like, no, they're going to stick with the models and not go with you. I love that. It's a really, it's a simple, like, quick interaction between them. But yeah, Ted can rock a suit is the thing. So,
I mean, Sudeikis is really handsome.
Very attractive. Very attractive.
Yeah, I mean, wink. it's not out of the question for Jason Sudeikis to be helming a Tom Ford campaign, but Ted is very dad. He's more dad than Jason Sudeikis is.
Sure, and it's the mustache more than anything. If he didn't have that mustache, you'd have a much different character on your hands. You is would. All I can say. That instantly just kind of endears him to all of us, you know.
Yeah. There's another backstory thing that I can't believe it's taken us over 50 minutes to discuss. I need to know about Beard being paid to bite someone in the ass.
I forgot about that too. We always miss so many important details.
Coach Beard has, he's had some wild, very discreet times.
I know. And the funny thing is how fine and open he is about talking about it. If he's asked, you know, like he's not forthcoming with the information, but he's just like very casually, yeah, he has a lot of sex, Coach Beard. Congrats.
You get to go out for a night on the town with one person in the show, just like a night out to the bars or whatever this person chooses to do, like however they usually spend their nights. So who are you picking from the show?
Rebecca.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
We'd connect on a lot of levels, but Keely too. Can I take both of them?
I think they seem to be a pair.
The three of us would have a lot of fun. That's all I'm saying.
See, Beard would be, it'd be just interesting to see how the man works, but it also you might end up in kind of a weird situation. Because I think Beard is very comfortable with himself and how he goes about his business. And I think that's maybe a comfort that a lot of people wouldn't have in certain situations. So you might end up somewhere you don't want to end up. I feel like going out with a 27-year-old Roy would be a riot, but you also might end up with a broken nose in just some form or fashion.
Sure. You'd definitely get in a fight if you went out with Roy, even like 30-something-year-old Roy. If you spend a night out with him, somebody's getting punched. And it might be you.
Yeah. You got to think, if it's not you, though, you guys are winning the fight.
Yes.
So as long as you are not the one fighting Roy, you're doing well.
Sure.
This episode also did one thing really, I mean, and not shocking. Ted understands the importance of representation. He has a conversation with Rebecca about the magazine that she's taking the pictures for, and she's really downplaying it. And Ted, with this great little quote about how important it might be for some little girl to see Rebecca on that magazine and you know how that's a really good thing that she's doing and doesn't let her downplay this cover that she's shooting, which I thought is a really nice touch.
Yeah, and it's similar to the Nate line about the shoes, where it's refreshing to see the guy make the point, which I could make a lot of jokes about that, but it's refreshing to see, let me rephrase that. It's refreshing to see a guy who doesn't have to be told what the point is when it comes to feminism, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have anything that didn't work in this one? I have absolutely nothing.
No, I don't. Except for the peanut butter thing. And that's not really something that doesn't work. I just think it's funny that Roy was all about it until he was faced with it. And then he's like, actually, this is kind of gross.
Yeah. Well, it is kind of odd to see Ted with such a disregard for cleanliness.
Every time I think about the peanut butter jar, I get sick. We need an episode just about the peanut butter.
Need to really break down, like, what is Ted possibly thinking? You know, he probably, so you would assume he does it at home. It's probably one of the things that Michelle Lasso wasn't crazy about. Like, she's having friends over, and it's like, Ted, put your goddamn peanut butter jar away. We can't have the jar of peanut butter out when company is around. So that it might have been something. I would bet that habit, I would bet that habit started when he was very small, probably driving Mama Lasso crazy, you know, Ted, get your finger out of the peanut butter jar. So probably a lot to unpack with that psychologically.
Yeah.
What is, you know, to go from Ted's worst moment, which is offering a person a peanut butter that he has licked his finger and then stuck it in the peanut butter, and to get away from that, what is Ted's best moment in this one? We've got the pop culture reference, the Cuckoo's Nest one. It's admirable that he's trying to stick with Roy, even though it's misguided. And I like that he gives, you know, he has that conversation with him, kind of comes clean in the apartment, gives him the option to say that he's, you know, he's injured. And then there's also the moment of him, you know, forgiving Rebecca, not excusing the behavior, but forgiving Rebecca.
That's, to me, I mean, hands down, the best moment. And you know, going back to what I said about how, yes, he's a very nice guy, but he's not a pushover. You know, not to sound cliche, I'm sure there's like Pinterest boards dedicated to some sort of quote about this. It takes a lot more strength to forgive somebody than it does to be resentful toward them. To be able to say, you know, I'm not going to forget it. It's very painful. It hurt. It's not okay that you did it. But I'm going to let this go for myself because, you know, what's that saying about when you don't forgive somebody, you're just poisoning yourself. You're not doing anything to the other person. You're just, you know, kind of making your own life that much harder. And
boy,
so
does that run deep.
Yeah, right. And so to me, like, that's what makes that moment work so well, is it's not him being like, okay, I forgive. It's not that kind of moment. He's stepping up and doing the hard thing, doing the thing that a lot of people would not do in that moment when they find out that they have been deceived for the past few months. So I think, you know, it's classic Ted, but also I don't think his reaction would have been the same had he not gone through a divorce himself.
It is. He does have the relatable quality, and it's something that it also wasn't a surprise to him. He's seen Rebecca struggle the whole season, just like he struggled the whole season, just like she was there for him, you know, when he had his panic attack. So I really like how you put it earlier, though, in that it wasn't him excusing the behavior. I think that's really important, because on rewatch, I was like, man, was he like too quick on that? Like, is it almost unrealistic that he was just straight up like, you know, it's fine? But he didn't say it's fine. He said, I forgive you. Completely different. It's a great moment. And of course, Ted Lasso. Very good when he's been wronged. Who is your Lenny Harris in this episode?
Roy.
It's Roy. Mm-hmm. It's definitely Roy. It's a great... Hannah Waddingham has a great episode in a specifically a great, like, 2 to 3 minutes. But it is the Brett Goldstein show in this one.
Yeah. I can't get over... I just love Roy. I say that so often, but I just think he's such a great character. He's got a lot of layers, you know?
And it's amazing that originally Brett Goldstein wasn't going to be in the show, that he was just going to be a writer. And he's so, so, so good as Roy.
I can't imagine anybody else playing Roy.
No, no way. No way. This one has a legitimate, awesome, big chill moment. And it really has two. They're kind of back to back. When Roy says second team is going to kick the first team's fucking asses today. Like, the team is there. We've gotten to the point. Ted arrived with a mission. He has gotten the team to where they need to be. And it's, you know, not to spoil the next episode, but it's like, we're, you know, if you gave Ted a couple more games, we're there, baby. Like, he has them rocking. And then I have this in all caps. Roy taps the believe sign.
Yeah.
Astounding.
That believe sign. It's just, you know, one of the things that makes the show so great, I think. I need my own in my house whenever I have bad days.
Oh, I think I have like a, yeah, I should put it right above my office doors.
Right? I just want it on I want a sticky version of it, like a post-it note version. I can just put it on my laptop.
Notre Dame needs to replace the play like a champion today sign with the belief sign.
Belief sign. I think that's pretty smart, actually.
Do it, you cowards.
Yeah, Notre Dame, we're coming for it. This podcast took a turn.
So here's the big question. Do we have more British listeners, which we know of two, or do we have more Notre Dame fan listeners?
I don't know. Does Mike Golick Jr. listen to this podcast?
If he does, shout out to him for getting the dream gig and calling the hot dog contest on July 4th.
Yeah.
Incredible moment. I was very happy for him. Someone I do not know, I was very, very happy for.
We're Twitter friends, in that, you know, I've never met him in real life, but we have a lot of mutuals. So Mike, if you're listening, thank you. And if you're not, we will tag you in this next week, and then you'll feel bad about not listening.
We will. He'll have to listen for the entire hour to wait until we get to talk about him and his Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Yep.
Alex, 1 to 5 biscuits.
16.
16 is a good one. 16 is a very good answer. I would actually say, we said 16 last time. I would say it's 14 biscuits. This episode is really good. I think the Diamond Dogs might kick it up just like, maybe this one is actually 15 biscuits. So just one biscuit more.
Fine.
But as always, it's multiple packs of biscuits.
I know. I mean, you could say a billion and I'm like, sure.
Yeah, it works out. But Alex, we have made it 9 episodes.
Look at us.
Ted Lasso. Look at where we started. Look at where we are.
I know. We've really come a long way. We've been on our own journey, Kyle.
We have. We've been rewatching the show for the umpteenth time, at least for you.
Yes.
And we've got one more. I am really looking forward to the finale. Folks, we have a very special guest joining for the finale. I think the most special guest joining for the finale. I'm very excited. Alex, tell the folks where they can follow you, where they can check out your new job, your work, and your other podcast.
Sure. I just started with For the Win with USA Today and work with a great team of writers and content creators. Even though I hate that word, we're doing lots of fun stuff. So please check us out at For the Win. And I have this other podcast, blah, 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 RPG. Follow us at Ain't Slade.
Everyone go do that, especially go check out For the Win. And if you're a baseball fan, go check out From Phenom to the Farm, my other podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports Ted Lasso and you haven't listened to any of the others, go back, listen. They're all, you know, all these Ted Lasso episodes are evergreen. All our old episodes and sports movies are evergreen. If you're enjoying it, subscribe, rate, leave a review, let us know how we're doing. Tune in next week. Next Monday, we are talking the finale of Ted Lasso. Should be a good one for me and Alex. Thanks for listening.